Brother.
Good evening.
What's up, man? I got something I think that you're going to be pretty impressed with.
Okay.
So I had the thought. We start each podcast. This was supposed to happen last week, but it didn't do it. I don't know why. Each podcast has a different theme song from a wrestler.
Okay.
You like that?
I like that.
I'm not going to tell you who it's going to be this week. And no, it's not Randy Orton. Although it was almost Randy Orton.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life.
I'm gonna throw it to you.
Hey, throw it to me because I think Dante, I got something.
Dante, here's the intro. Boom.
Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, we
welcome you. D-Generation Next probably brings to you is WWF Tag Team Champions of the World. I'm so sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome you to the Preachers and Pinfall podcast, episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make it to episode 3. So, you'll get this podcast probably on Tuesday. So, I want to reference something. Monday Night Raw is happening
right now
as we record this podcast, but we're not recapping weeklies. That's not what we do on this podcast. We're really just kind of hitting big news and talking about big stories. So if something drops on Raw tonight, you'll hear about it next Monday, which next Monday will be the first ever Preachers and Pinfalls WrestleMania preview spectacular. We have no guests. It's still only going to be an hour. We're just going to talk about WrestleMania, and it's the first time we're doing it.
I'm pretty excited about that.
So let's get right into it.
Let's go. What's first on the agenda?
The first thing we got to talk about, top stories. I was going back and forth with 6, but I came up with a top 5. So, but I want to do an honorable mention for the top 5 stories of the week. So this week's top 5 honorable mention is the dud that is Kurt Angle's retirement match.
Here we go. Yes. So you want my take on it?
As a matter of fact, I do.
Oh, as a matter of fact, I will give it to you. So I think everybody was a little less than enthused to hear Baron Corbin was going to be the WrestleMania opponent, the last match, the go-home match for Kurt Angle. I was a little pissed, to be honest. And I think that because, I don't know. I don't know if Vince is smart enough, right, or if this was by design to say we're going to throw them an intentional curveball, right, and then change it anyway, or if they really thought that Baron Corbin was a good idea, and then once they saw the backlash, they said, let's hurry up and let's change it, because now the talk is they want to change it from being Baron Corbin. I still don't know who that person might be. Here's Dez's top 3 of who Kurt Angle could have faced other than Baron Corbin. Are you ready, Dante?
I'm ready.
First off is Undertaker. Given the style of match that both of them can work now in their age, at this point in their careers, from that standpoint, it made sense. Because Undertaker cannot wrestle a really physical match. Cannot wrestle a fast-paced match, nor can Kurt Angle. I think that Kurt Angle would have done a good job of protecting Taker, and Taker done a good job of protecting Kurt Angle. And if somebody's gonna like be the last match for Kurt Angle, why not Taker? Because when you think of last matches, my all-time favorite last match was HBK and Ric Flair. And only because of the story that told, right? And I think that WWE did an excellent job of telling that story before we got to WrestleMania. But there was these were two legends. These were two icons. And I think that given the, if they would have used enough, would have been able to tell a good story, Taker, Angle. Taker still doesn't have a WrestleMania opponent, which is another reason why that made more sense to me. Another person that made more sense was John Cena. Because, again, Angle was that first match, or he was the first guy that Cena really faced when Cena was called up from OVW. And logistically, that just makes sense. If anybody's going to put Angle away for his last match, why not it be the guy that put Cena over the first time he got called up in the WWE, to the main roster, rather? And then, two, Cena doesn't have a WrestleMania opponent yet. So it just kind of makes all of the sense in the world. My third, and this is going to come as no surprise, Randy Orton, just because I love Randy Orton. I don't know. Randy Orton.
Quirk twice.
Randy Orton goes into every scenario, so whatever.
He cannot quirk twice.
Yeah, whatever.
I agree with everything but Undertaker. I don't want two old guys out there working at the same time.
We saw it in Saudi Arabia.
Oh man, yeah, because Triple H busted his arm. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just. I stopped watching it. I didn't even get through it. So I was trying to figure out why they went this direction. I'm like, is this Vince, you know, kind of sticking it to Kurt for leaving him all those years, making TNA economically viable? I don't know. But, you know, I was like, okay, well, storyline-wise, it makes sense, but they had that blow-off already. So then it doesn't. So my only conclusion would be there's not really a heat-seeking heel on Raw. Nobody likes Baron Corbin. He doesn't have the quote unquote X-Pac heat, but he's got honky tonk Hey, I love Baron Corbin signs in the arena heat. I mean, he's Vince loves him, which is easy. Look at him; he's huge. Of course, Vince likes him.
Of course,
guys in the back like him. I mean, as a heel, and I like Baron Corbin in NXT. Until he started talking, then I'm like, okay, that man needs a manager. But what if Baron goes and wins? I mean, just how hated in that TGI Friday host outfit he wears in the ring, how hated would he be? So I'm like, maybe that's the direction they're going.
Okay, but I would agree.
There's one of that makes sense, and only one. Then you said it. It's John Cena.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I take that back. No, there's one other one that makes sense if he's ready to come back.
Triple H.
Jason Jordan.
Yeah, Jason Jordan was in my mind, but I don't know if he's ready to come back yet.
Everybody else that kind of makes sense, they're either retired or working. Like Kurt's first kind of big feud was against Taz. Well, Taz is retired. Mm-hmm. Triple H is working Batista, which also made sense. Stone Cold can't work anymore. Vince is 125 years old. He can't work anymore. So any kind of legend that was somewhat viable, and the guy who actually makes the most sense is going to wrestle Seth Rollins, and that's Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
You know, God rest his soul, Eddie Guerrero's passed away. JBL, all his great WWE rivalries, because you got to keep something in mind when you talk about Kurt Angle. Yes, there's an argument that can be made that he's the greatest mat wrestler, mat technician in the history of the business, but Kurt's run in WWE wasn't very long.
It was great, though. It was great, but it was not long.
Not very long. So then you kind of look and you say, well, the bulk of his career was in TNA. Well, AJ's working Randy, which would have made sense. This weekend, I actually went back and I watched TNA Genesis from 2005. Because I tell people, anybody who listens to me, you look at TNA from 2003 to about 2006, they were putting together as good a product without the budget of WWE. They were putting out stuff as good as WWE was. And that specific pay-per-view had the dream match of the decade, Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle. And that was one of the best matches, in my view, of the early 2000s, let alone that year. That was one of the best matches. You go from 2000 to 2009. That's one of the best matches in that era.
Well, you say Samoa Joe. Why not Samoa Joe?
He's working Rey Mysterio.
But why? I thought that we were going to get Rey Mysterio.
Because Rey Mysterio pinned Samoa Joe, so that gave Rey Mysterio the title shot against Samoa Joe. I don't like that match simply because Rey and Andrade Cien Almas should be working WrestleMania. People need to see Zelina Vega walk Andrade to the ring, but people need to see Andrade at WrestleMania. He is one of the best young talents that company has.
I agree.
The matches that he and Rey have been having have been fun. Rey's found 10 years working with that guy. Yeah. He's found 10 years.
Yeah.
So, but no, I agree. But he's working Rey. It's already said. So everybody that he could work, they're already working. They make a lot. I would even argue there may be something as far as TNA history between Kurt and Bobby Roode. But I wouldn't book that match for WrestleMania because Bobby Roode is ice cold.
Yeah.
He's not hot enough to work that match. So he's going against Apollo Crews and he's wrestled Chad Gable. He's wrestling AJ Styles tomorrow night on SmackDown. So I don't know. John Cena makes the most sense. Rumor and innuendo says that they may be switching to Cena. Cena's came out on social media, which has kind of led them down to changing. But we don't know. They may say, look, you guys got Kofi. And, hey, you guys got Seth Rollins.
Be grateful.
So shut up. We're going with this plan. That could be it. So that's the honorable mention. The number five story from this cycle, whichever way you want to take it, I'll start this one, is the women's triple threat. One of the reasons that it's newsworthy is because it's number five on my list. Mm. 2 weeks ago it was probably number one. Now it's number five. So my biggest issue, I guess, if I have one now, is the story they're attempting to tell. And I watched the YouTube of Ronda Rousey in Philly, you know, dropping all these F-bombs, talking about how wrestling's fake and how wrestling's scripted. You didn't have to go there. Because if you think about it, if you say wrestling's scripted and wrestling's fake, you kind of put yourself as a worker in a compromising position. Because now it's got to be a shoot. It's got to be a shoot. Like, Charlotte's got to really punch you in the face now. Can't be a working punch. Are you going to go and no sell everything in this triple threat? And if it's fake and it's scripted and you don't need it, why are you so enthralled with being the champion? Because if it's fake and it's scripted, just lay the belt in the ring and walk away and let Charlotte and Becky have the main event. This is kind of the time that I feel like this is when, you know, they like that shock value of blurring the line, but they make it too complicated. Because here's the truth. Ronda Rousey got boat raced her last UFC fight against Holly Holm.
Mm-hmm.
However, Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair, all things being equal, could not do that to Ronda Rousey.
No.
People can say what they want about Brock's last fight against Cain Velasquez, but there's not a guy in the WWE that could do that to Brock.
No.
And Ronda could say that, yes, I lost my last UFC fight. But there's not a woman that can step in this ring and do that. I'm still the baddest woman on the planet. And the truth is, yeah, Becky sort of earned her way. I didn't know Fit Finley made decisions. The reason she got into the Women's Royal Rumble. And Charlotte used her last name and her cachet to get in the main event. But here's the truth. They can't touch me. I think there was a simpler way to turn her heel. An even simpler way to turn her heel was to introduce maybe one of the three, four horsewomen of MMA that they've got at NXT.
Yeah.
You could introduce Jesselyn Duke. You could introduce Marina Shafir. You probably were not going to introduce Shayna Baszler, although there's precedent for that. You go back to, I believe it was SummerSlam. Bayley needed a tag team partner. She brought in Bayley. Bayley went and back to NXT the next day. You could have brought, because the truth is, I love Shayna Baszler. She's a heck of a lot scarier than Ronda Rousey. She's probably not a better fighter than Ronda, but you see her presentation. Oh, Shayna looked like she want to not kick your teeth down your throat. But this, the story has cooled off a lot, and I think a lot of it has to do with the narrative, the way that they're trying to tell it. And they're not letting the story tell itself, if that makes any sense. Hmm. Because the story's told. You have the shooting star in Ronda Rousey, who everyone probably should have known she was going to be great in the ring, since she's an Olympic caliber athlete. I mean, we've seen Olympic athletes be great in WWE before.
I.e. Kurt Angle, i.e. Brock Lesnar.
Mark Henry. Chad Gable. I give you old school, and I know you don't know. The great Ken Patera.
I thought you were going to say Ken Shamrock, and that guy, no.
Ken Shamrock wasn't an Olympian. But the story was there, and I don't think embellishing it added to it. So what's
your take on it? I'm gonna be honest. At first I didn't like it. Just dropped my phone. I'm so excited. I dropped my phone. I was not into it. I was into it. The narrative that they were painting with Ronda, double R is what I call her now. I feel like she's bad enough. She's double R. Triple H, double R, you know. I'm into it. They took a risk with going all in with this Ronda Rousey storyline and telling it in the way that they're telling it. From her comments about wrestling being fake, and even from getting her husband involved last week. Did you see that?
Yeah, that was so useless.
I actually enjoyed it, because we do have to remember. We have to remember this, Dante, that professional wrestling is nothing else but a soap opera where people fight. And so it needs to have some elements of dramatization that almost kind of don't seem like it'll happen in real life. So her husband getting involved was super cool to me, because it called me back to the days of the 90s when Stone Cold would ride down in a beer truck and spray down Vince McMahon. Like, that's not going to happen in real life. You know, it reminded me of days when Shawn Michaels would just be crotch chopping people in the face in like booty shorts. Like, that doesn't happen in real life. So I needed that as a wrestling fan. And I like it. I like it for Ronda's character, because she isn't, you know, built from the ground a WWE superstar. She's new. She's mainly from the UFC. And the story that she's telling, that, hey, wrestling's fake, she can say that because she's on the outside, somebody that came in. You know, I genuinely like it. Now, speaking about Charlotte and Becky, you know, Charlotte's one of my favorite athletes in the ring, male or female. She is one of my favorite WWE superstars. Becky, I love her character. I love the way that she's changed. They're going to handle their own as it relates to telling a story. My concern was Ronda. And I think the way that they've shaped this thing up, from her really using her YouTube page, her Twitter, like, she's been using these outlets to help sell the story. And I like it. I don't know. I wouldn't say that they're doing a good job, because, you know, what do you have to compare it to? They've never done something of this caliber before with an outside WWE star. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't do this with a Brock, or they didn't do this with, there's no other, you can't compare this to anything. And to be honest, I didn't want this. I've been watching wrestling for 22 plus years now. So I did not want you to come out into the typical, I'm a heel, I'm a champion, I'm better than you. Okay, I'm tired of that, right? Tell me that in a different way. And they've been able to deliver on that. So I'm actually more amped up to see the match, because I want to see how this narrative gets told. I want to see how this story ends. I'm really interested. I want to know, okay, I feel Becky's going to win, but now I want to know how. Like, is Charlotte and Becky going to come out and just fire on I sound like I'm in seventh grade. Are they just going to stick? Are they going to stick Ronda in the face, like, hard for real? I want to know. I want to see that, because that's the story they've been painting in. I'm fully invested. I'm fully invested in this. It needs to be the main event. I'm fully invested.
So, the number... and it's a question. So I'm going to ask it. I'd like for you to answer it. Why are Braun Strowman and Asuka, why are they ice?
Oh, you know, I don't know. Like, Braun's doing some weird thing with cars now. Destroying cars. And there's a toy now. Did you see that? There's a toy that's been released.
Yes!
Of Braun Strowman destroying a Camaro. And a lot of the chatter on the dirt sheets is that Vince did that just to sell that toy. which isn't hard to believe. Here's my first initial thought. I got two thoughts, okay? You ask me, I'm going to tell you. My first thought is that Braun and Asuka aren't selling merch as much as they were 6 months ago, 4 months ago. Therefore, they got moved down the totem pole. You don't sell merch, you're not on TV. It just sucks that Asuka happens to hold the title. And true, you know, WWE fans still happen to like Braun Strowman. That's my first thought. My second thought is that sometimes the storyline is bigger than a championship. We've seen that in the past with WWE stars all the time. There have been people who held the title, but there have been other storylines that main evented, that marqueed WrestleManias, or not even WrestleManias, but that marqueed pay-per-views, because the storyline was bigger than the title. And honestly, this may jog your memory. I forgot who said this. It might have been Triple H, Trips, Hunter. It might have been John Laurinaitis, my uncle. I don't know. But the title doesn't make the star, right?
Mm-hmm.
The star makes the title. Mm-hmm. And maybe Asuka just doesn't have it, like a lot of people thought she did, to be able to really define that title. Charlotte had it. Right, there was a not just because I'm a Charlotte fan, even Naomi. Like, when I think back, and I'm glad you asked this question, because I had to think back to past SmackDown Women's Championship holders. Naomi, there was a certain way she added her brand to that title. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt that was Naomi's title. Charlotte, the queen, she added her touch, her brand to that title. Asuka, yeah. Like, she got it, and I'm glad she got it, because I think she deserved it.
But I agree. Now,
what do you do after it? Like, you have to define that title, and Asuka just simply hasn't done that for me. And I think that if WWE is smart, they will remove the title off of her. I think it's time. Like, I think Oscar's a great performer, hands down. One of the top three athletes in the company. One of the top on SmackDown, period. But I think that after WrestleMania, I think she should drop the title. Braun, I don't know what's going on with Braun. I want somebody to tell me. Because Braun is still a dominant force.
Well, let me try to tell you. Let me try to tell you. So, not that David Shoemaker needs the endorsement of a rookie podcaster, but if you go to the March 13th edition of his podcast, The Masked Man Show, he was with a former WWE writer, a guy by the name of Kazim. I'm going to screw up his last name, but I'm going to try it anyway. His name's Kazim Famuyiwa.
Yeah, you messed that up.
And he was talking about how many guys are super talented. Because he basically said, look, if you make it, if you're on the WWE and you're out on the road every week with WWE, you don't suck. But it's like you get 3 hours on Monday and 2 hours on Tuesday. And it's like, man, I want to get, you know, Apollo Crews more TV time, but where do you put him?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of Braun's issue because he's ice cold. I mean, he's in a battle royal with no one else because no one else has signed up for the battle royal, which this is how they should book it. No one else should sign up for the battle royal. And like WrestleMania comes and he comes to the ring and like somebody says, no one's signed up for the battle royal because no one wants to fight Braun because they're afraid of him. And then just let him like destroy the ring.
But or you remember, tear something down. You remember what happened. That would be hilarious. You remember what happened last year, right? At WrestleMania, Braun was on this great run, and then close to Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, he kind of died off. And so WrestleMania, he becomes tag champion with Jacob from Park Forest High School. I don't know, remember the kid's
Park
name.
Park Forest Elementary School.
here's
the big question, though. He's nowhere near the top of the card, going to have a marquee match. Is the card lacking without him there? I would say no. I mean, look at what people are talking about. People are saying, man, Undertaker didn't sign a contract. Is he going to have a match? And I don't think he should. Man, where's Cena? Cena doesn't have a match. Okay, well, I guess Triple H is now kind of the Legends match guy now. You know, no one's really clamoring all that much. Or no one's saying that the card is missing something because Braun Strowman isn't working a big time match at Mania.
True. I agree.
Now, I think too, but I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think you and I have had this conversation once before about him. I really think that Vince McMahon sees Braun Strowman like he sees Andre the Giant. That Braun Strowman, he isn't Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is talent. He's a worker. Seth Rollins is the worker, in my opinion, in the company. Yeah. AJ Styles is a worker. I think he sees Braun a lot like he sees Andre, also kind of like the way he sees Brock Lesnar. But Brock Lesnar's character needs the championship. That's the only difference. In that, he sees Brock as an attraction. Let's see what Brock can destroy with his bare hands this week. And for a while, that's what it was. And it wouldn't surprise me in a couple years if you get a Hulk Andre sort of storyline with Braun Strowman and somebody. If you notice, a lot of his big moments the last couple of years have been multi-man matches and battle royals. Andre the Giant was the king of the battle royal. Leading up to WrestleMania 3, when Bobby Heenan brainwashed him, which, let me just say, in my opinion, that was the best story WWE ever told. Anywho, he brainwashes Andre. You should get a match against Hogan. You're undefeated. Hogan doesn't want you because he know he can't beat you. And then I was like, I could see that in a couple of years for Braun. Braun's going to go and he's going to dominate Saudi Arabia again this year, probably. And, he's going to dominate the Royal Rumble and probably not win it. But I really think Vince sees him as an attraction, which is why he's paired with the other, with the mainstream attraction, with Colin Jost and Saturday Night Live weekly update.
Well, let me interject this.
Okay, interject.
You say you see Braun as Andre the Giant.
Vince sees Braun as Andre the Giant.
I think Ben sees Braun as a Big Show. I think that Big Show, and I think that Vince loved Big Show, but he never really put him in that limelight position, other than times when he was either in the tag team or if he was doing something that included over the rope. Now, what Big Show was going to be known for and going to be remembered for are these one-off situations with Floyd Mayweather, right? Bringing in the entertainment part for the WrestleMania. And I think that's the route that Braun is becoming. I think that, to your point, I think he's becoming more of a caricature than actual character, right?
I agree with that, but I think to a point, you know, when you're that size, it's hard not to be an attraction.
Yeah.
And then Braun isn't, I mean, I've met the Big Show. The Big Show is legit 7'1", 7'2". He's legit 7 foot. That is not a work, people. I think to a point, when you're that size, you are an attraction. And although Braun isn't that size, I mean, Braun's 6'8", 6'9", he's not 7 foot. But I think because Braun is, he's got like that big man size as far as height, close to it. But then he's got like Mark Henry like strength.
Yeah.
And that's unique. So the good thing about Braun is while he's shown the ability to work with a Roman, to work with a Drew McIntyre, if he never really does, he'll always occupy his own space in WWE and make a lot of money. Asuka's is much more simple. It's much more simple. And I don't know how deep I'm going to go into it because it is so simple. Asuka's proof that the women's division only needs one champion.
Okay.
You bring in the women's tag titles and you weren't very deep in the first place.
Yeah, true.
Slash, and I know you and I have talked about this before. Slash, Asuka's also proof that I think the women need their own show. And because you've got 5 hours, and the only story as far as your women's division that you've gotten over is the triple threat. Boss Hug won the championships, but they don't really have a story. Which, if they really stay true, and I'm going to save this for our next segment, but if they really stay true, they don't need to defend those championships on WrestleMania either. So the number three story.
Okay, let's go to the next. Oh, I'm sorry. I was about to say let's go to the next segment. What's the next?
Okay, the next story. Number three is Miz's promo. Miz proved he is the best promo in the business now.
Yes, you love the Miz. We did talk about this recently. The Miz is the Miz. I did not expect anything less from him. He's an actor. No, he's a certified actor. From his background, from his experience, Miz is a great on the mic. Honestly, if you want my honest opinion, in the past 10 years, I have a Mount Rushmore, like 10 years now. People might hear this and say, oh, you're leaving out this guy. No, this isn't from the past 20. This isn't from the past 15. This is from the past 10 years. So that's all of the year 2000, right? That's all of 2008, 2009. 2009. So in the past 10 years, my Mount Rushmore of Mike, of workers on that Mike, Miz is on that Mount Rushmore.
He should be.
Yeah, because he can work a mic. Like, Miz, from the moment he came in as the chick magnet. Like, Mike the Miz,
he can
work a mic, man. And I give him his due props. But I did not expect anything less from him.
So we got two more stories left. One of which I don't know how much you're going to be able to comment on because it's an NXT story. Tommaso Ciampa, aka the Blackheart.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely investing into this.
BKA the Psycho Killer, head neck surgery last week, yeah. I believe.
And he's going to be out for a very long time.
He's going to be out for 6 months to a year, which is unfortunate because the last two times he's gotten hot, he's gotten hurt. And I just hope that Tommaso Ciampa is the snake bitten because, my goodness, he is the only thing he's not is 6'3". He's got everything else. So love the five-way. I knew Velveteen wasn't going to win because he's going to do something with my dude, the original bro, yeah. Matt Riddle. Kind of had a feeling Ricochet wasn't going to win because I think it seems that Aleister Black and Ricochet are going to do something on the main roster, either as a tag team or away from one another. I've been an Adam Cole fan since Ring of Honor. I've been an Adam Cole fan since he beat up AJ Styles and became the third leader of the Bullet Club in New Japan. I am so excited for Adam Cole because he's little. He's so little. And there's really no way he should be in this position, but he's so good. And Johnny Gargano is, dare I say it, but I'm going to say it. Of all of the guys in the company right now, Johnny Gargano reminds me most of Shawn Michaels. His psychology, the way he works smart. He understands the art of the rising action to the crescendo. He sells but doesn't die. He gained sympathy. He proved when he was the culprit behind who hurt. He's an effective heel. He is everything. He's just like 5'8" and 190 pounds. I'm excited for this match.
Honestly, I am too.
Adam Cole and Johnny Wrestling. I'm going to make my prediction now. Spoiler alert. And this probably should be saved for next week, but I'm going to say it now. Right now, they're going to have the match of the weekend. I said it. Argue with me. I don't care. I said it. They're going to have a match of the weekend.
You know, I've been really diving and digging more into my NXT understanding, and, you know, you have really put me onto that. And I love NXT. I'm very well aware about what's happening currently with the roster. With my guy getting injured, that neck injury is really heartbreaking because him, Ricochet, Aleister Black, you know, they kind of made their come up, and I was excited to see. I was excited, but I was also kind of concerned, you know, like with such a deep roster, where will they fit? Honestly, all of these names are great. All of these matches are going to be good. There's one man in NXT that I love. He's my favorite guy in NXT. And he's working his way to be my top guy in the WWE period. And that's Velveteen Dream.
That's only because y'all look like y'all cousins.
Oh, that's nothing to do with it. let me use this time, the next 5 minutes, to express to people my affection for Velveteen.
Talk about Velveteen.
For Velveteen Dream. As an African American, we haven't had like a really cool, like just straight up athlete in the WWE. And you talk about Booker T, great. Talk about Kofi Kingston, great. But you talk about somebody who took a character and just kind of made it their own. Because when you think about great characters in WWE, I mean characters, not workers, not wrestlers. I'm talking about Macho Man Randy Savage was a great character. I want to say, Hulk Hogan was a great character. And these are people that their characters were out. Undertaker, great character.
Greatest character of all time.
Their characters will outlive the wrestlers. Mm-hmm. Because you may not know who Mark Calloway is when he's dead and gone. No, God forbid, when that day comes. When that obituary says Mark Calloway, Mark Calloway died. Who was that? But let somebody say Undertaker died. Oh my freaking God. You're gonna lose your mind. Because that character outlived the wrestler. And I think mm-hmm. that Velveteen Dream has something with the Velveteen Dream. Not only that, but man, that guy, if you build a professional wrestler from the ground up, Velveteen Dream, he's got the size, he's got the height, he's got the look. The guy can work, and he, again, man, his character, I'm just so enthralled by his character, taking something of our culture, a love and affection for Prince, because Prince is by far one of my favorite artists. You take that, and you mix that into the ring, he's got like this sexy Val Venus, Macho Man type of thing going on. Like it's cool and it's fresh. And those are my reasons why I love Velveteen Dream, man. Like so,
I love Velveteen as well. And what is shocking about the Velveteen Dream, Patrick Clark, is that he's 23 years old.
Yeah.
He is he's a prodigy. I mean, he gets it. Presentation, mic work, everything. He's going to have a great match with Matt Riddle. But they ain't going to be better than Cole and Gargano. They are going to set the Barclays Center on fire Saturday night. So it goes without saying that the number one story is Kofi Kingston.
Kofi.
And I want to say two things in kayfabe and two things in real life about this story. The two kayfabe things is I needed to come out why Daniel Bryan is afraid of Kofi Kingston. Because apparently he's been masterminding part of this whole screw job. But it leads me to an even more interesting question. And before I get to my two points, I want your insight on this. Because in kayfabe and in real life, Vince McMahon never thought a whole lot about Daniel Bryan.
He didn't. Listen,
and now all of a sudden he comes out and said, Daniel Bryan says you're a B. When did y'all get cool, Vince? Because I know this. Vince ain't driving no Prius.
Right.
Vince ain't all of a sudden start recycling.
So I've got a couple of thoughts, right? I don't want to unload too much. I'm going to try to, because we have 43 minutes now. We've got 15 more minutes left, about roughly. I want to get through the rest of the show. So okay. I want to hear your thoughts. I don't want to go. So I'm going to give mine. Just don't let me go. Because I've been really thinking about this for the past week. Since the day I sent you that clip.
Okay.
I think that going into WrestleMania, you need to have an underdog. Daniel Bryan played the role a couple years ago. Who was it last year? I can't think. We watched it together. I forgot who it was last year. But I think that every year going into WrestleMania, there needs to be an underdog story.
Mm-hmm.
Let me cut you off.
I need you to tell me in kayfabe why Vince and Daniel Bryan are friends.
I think that I don't know if this is what they're going to do. This is what I'm hoping they do. I would like for them to bring it out that Daniel Bryan sold out. That, yeah, he's the economically friendly champion. But I think that you bring some... I think that you bring not the corporation. Well, what's the name? What's this new age thing they do now? It's called the what is Triple H?
Authority.
Yeah, I think that you bring it out. Daniel Bryan is a part of the Authority. I don't know how I honestly don't know how you blend that in there, but I think that's what you do. I think Daniel Bryan should be a part of the Authority.
I want to hit on some things that are for real. So I listen to David Shoemaker. I listen to I listen to Not Sam Wrestling, and they were talking about this idea of what you could do if Kofi doesn't win. And I was thinking about this, and Kofi Kingston needs to win this match at WrestleMania. With that, the way they've told this story in a nuanced way without being completely overt, I think it's been brilliant by WWE.
I do too.
Because they're bringing light to something that, you know, being a black guy who I've been watching wrestling, you said 22 plus years. I'm 39. I actually don't remember a time in my life where I didn't watch wrestling. So I've been watching wrestling for at least 35 years of what I can remember. And of course, you know, at 6 and 7 years old, some of my memory's fragmented. But as a teenager and in college, you know, it's much more complete. But there's something that's consistent in my memory, and that is the faces of every company that I've ever watched, from World Class Championship Wrestling to the USWA to Memphis Wrestling to WCW, the NWA, Mid-Atlantic, WWE, TNA, the faces of those companies have all been white. And you have an opportunity, as Vince is kind of subtly saying, this is what he subtly said this whole story. You guys like you can draw money as long as you have a certain gimmick, i.e. walking down the ring rapping, maybe you got a big colorful bird on your arm, throwing pancakes.
Coco, beware!
You know, breakdancing in the middle of the ring, having a very, very bad accent. So you guys can do that, and you can make money and have a great space and make a great living in this company, but people like you can't be the face of the franchise. There are a lot of things you could do. You could have Big E come in and screw Kofi because he feel like he should be the champion. Or you could have Rowan run in and screw Kofi and whatever. But Kofi needs to win this match because every black wrestling fan, if Kofi loses, even if the way you schmoz it is brilliant, every black wrestling fan is going to say the same thing. But they don't really think Kofi could be the champion.
I agree.
See, you can schmoz Ronda Rousey because Cave Side Seats, I believe, reported that the women are going to close this WrestleMania. You can schmoz Ronda because they're closing the show. They have their moment. They've had their own pay-per-view. Charlotte and Sasha, they've main evented several pay-per-views already. And you can continue that story, and that'll be fine. Brock can beat Seth Rollins. And you can have Roman Reigns screw Seth and tell him, no, you can't have him on. I'm the guy to beat Brock. And we'll be cool with that. But there's no way you can Booker T Kofi Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
And expect it, because maybe it's just me. In the back of my mind, if Kofi doesn't win this match, I'm going to say, yeah, okay, I get the swerve, but you know, you don't think you can send off your biggest show with a black dude as champ. And here's the thing. If the women's triple threat is going to close the show, then sure as shooting, that WWE championship match is not going to go on in the last segment. It's going to probably go on
in the first hour. Yeah. Did they always put the SmackDown championship in that first hour?
I mean, suffice it to say, Seth and Brock are going to go on next to last.
Yeah.
And the women are going to probably go on last.
If Taker doesn't get a match. If Taker or Cena don't get a match, then yeah, Brock and Rollins will go next to last.
But I just wanted to get that in there. I agree.
But you're not – hey, I don't disagree with you. I think that here's the thing. I honestly, genuinely, with all of my heart, I believe that Kofi's going to win the championship. I think that he's going to win. And I think that this is going to represent years of us. And this is why I like Velveteen Dream so much, because, you know, he's not an R-Truth. He's not a Kofi Kingston. He's not a Coco Beware. All of these guys you kind of just named. But he's a legit worker, man. He's a legit character. And he doesn't have some of the stereotypical things that black wrestlers do have. He's not coming down to the ring rapping. He's not coming down dancing. He's his own character. And yet he's still able, because when we look at, when we tear down all of the WWE top black performers over the past 20 years, I'll name some, right? And help me out if I miss some. These are the top guys that did not have, like, the rapping, dancing gimmick, okay? So exclude R-Truth. At this point, exclude Kofi Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
Exclude Big E. Exclude Xavier, because they're a part of the New Day, and all they do is dance and sing down the ring. Exclude them. But who we will include Mark Henry. We will include, gosh, Booker T. We will include, I can't think of anybody else. Ahmed Johnson.
I hated Ahmed Johnson.
We will include Farouk. Or let's take it from his days with the APA. We'll say Ron Simmons, right? I can't really think of. I don't want to say The Rock. And this statement was made by Booker T, and I so much agree. Rock is not the black wrestler. He's Samoan. So I don't really want to give him that.
Booker T wasn't saying that in terms of his ethnicity. Because even The Rock will tell you, and I want to say he tweeted something to this effect. And that is, the way he's black and he's Samoan. And basically his tweet said that his presentation, the way he was presented, allowed him to transcend the idea of race. But this is a different ball game.
Let me say this too, and I gotta kind of go into colorism a little bit. Rocky was very light skinned, and so
he's yellow.
He's yellow.
Hold on. You talking about Kofi, who is darker, and then also he is the son of West African immigrants.
He is. So I don't want to leave. Go back to what you were saying. Other than the wrestlers we just named, Booker T, Ahmed, Farouk, Mark Henry, fam, who are some legit, genuine, top WWE performers who are black, who did not have a gimmick like that, like R-Truth. There's not that many of them.
They're great workers, but didn't have great gimmicks. Because JYD used to dance to the ring, and then
he did.
And then I'll tell you, and I'm glad that just reminded me of something that I thought about. I remember listening to an interview with Hulk Hogan. And I don't remember the pay-per-view. It was the precursor to the Royal, I want to say it was the Wrestling Challenge, but I don't remember. But JYD won it. And, like, he was white hot. And Hogan even said, man, at that time, he was as hot, if not a little bit hotter than I was. And he went to Vince. He was like, man, listen, I'll turn heel. Put the title on him. That guy's hot. And Vince said no. You even go back a couple years before JYD in the early 80s. And people will tell you, man, like 84, 85, really doing that whole rock and wrestling thing that they were pushing with Hogan. There are people that will tell you there was nobody hotter than Jimmy Superfly Snuka. They never put the title on Jimmy Snuka. Jimmy Snuka's Polynesian. He ain't even black.
He looked too much like a Negro.
maybe that one.
And that goes to our point, though, right? And so, hey, the reason I brought that up is because that just shows my why I really have a deep affection for Velveteen Dream. He doesn't have a gimmick, and he's being pushed, and he's a great, great worker. He's black.
Yes.
That boy is black, okay? Ain't no Polynesian, ain't no Samoan. he's a Negro, okay? And then, two, I think Kofi needs this because, you know, it'll show that you don't need a gimmick to have the belt put on you to be black. Like, we need this. The culture, African-American, black culture, we need this.
We do.
And I think that we haven't had it. You know, we've been deprived of this for so long. As a wrestling fan, you know, there have been many times I was looking, gosh, man, it almost pained me growing up. And as I got older and realized it, that I didn't have that many black wrestlers to look to and say, man, that's my favorite wrestler. Like, I want to be that wrestler. I was looking up to white guys. I was looking up to the Stone Cold Steve Austin, the Randy Orton, the Shawn Michaels, guys who look nothing like me. You know what I mean? And so to see Kofi with the dreads, I think, and they're white hot. The New Day is white hot. And I honestly, this is what I think is going to happen. Alluding to some of your preconceived notions from the past couple of months. Even when I was working in New Vistas, you and I would talk about this. You said that what you do is don't break the New Day up. Put the titles on all of them. And I think that they have the potential, and I think that they are becoming our version of the Four Horsemen.
Hey, look. You could put the title on all of them and turn them heel.
It wouldn't matter.
But I'm glad you said that, because quite frankly, I don't care what they do after WrestleMania. They can screw it up. They can't screw up WrestleMania. So as we kind of come to a close, I'm gonna save two segments for next week. I want to get to the sermon close. So this is just a part where you and I can really have a little space, a couple minutes apiece, to kind of talk about something about pro wrestling that they want. Because it's my segment and I came up with the idea, I'm going to go first.
I will allot that. Yeah.
I'm going to go first.
Age before beauty, my friend.
So when I was about 13 years old, 12, 13 years old, we had finally gotten cable, although at that time it was only in one room in the house. But it was cool. We got cable. And I remember coming home from middle school, turn on ESPN, about 3:30, 4 o'clock, and I saw something called the Global Wrestling Federation. And the first match I remember seeing in the Global Wrestling Federation was for the light heavyweight championship. And it was between two guys that would really define any offshoot of a light heavyweight division, you want to call it. They really brought the Japanese super juniors to the States. You want to call it the X division if you like TNA. You can call it the Cruiserweights if you like WCW. Call it 205 Live now, or NXT UK. But I saw a guy by the name of the Lightning Kid wrestle another guy who I became a huge fan of watching ECW in the 90s, a guy by the name of Jerry Lynn. And the Lightning Kid, if you know your wrestling history, that's Sean Waltman, who you probably know as X-Pac, as you probably know as Six, if you were alive during the Monday Night Wars. But I think because he was literally the smallest guy in every crew, whether it was the NWO, DX, or the Click, Sean Waltman doesn't really get the credit that he's due for his contribution to professional wrestling / sports entertainment. He was really the first small guy. Now, I know Brett was small, and I know Sean was small, but you compare them physique-wise to Sean Waltman,
yeah.
It was a reason why Kid was in his name for so many years, because he looked like a little kid.
Yeah.
But he was the first to use martial arts in the ring. He was the first to really use the ropes and the turnbuckle. He was doing it when no one else was doing it. And you see this style so often in wrestling now. People don't really know its origin not just in the States, but even in WCW. And Sean Waltman was that guy. And I would say in this group, going into the Hall of Fame in DX, where you, of course, you got Triple H, you got the New Age Outlaws, you got China, and you got X-Pac. Hopefully someday X-Pac goes in by himself. I think for his unique contribution to the business, he deserves it. I think a lot of what he did in ring is kind of lost to the annals of time.
Yeah.
Not only that, I mean, if he were wrestling in 2019, he would probably be a guy who would contend for WWE Championship. So, look, go out of your way. YouTube, Global Wrestling Federation, it's on there. Look at his stuff against Jerry Lynn. It is classic, it's timeless, and it stands up.
I'm just
going to tag. The church are open.
I want to tag on to what you said, you know, as I pontificate, and I kind of expressed these thoughts when you and I had this original conversation over the phone. I like X-Pac, 1-2-3 Kid. I remember him in the 90s. I remember watching matches. I remember him in WCW for a little bit. I remember him in DX. DX, my favorite faction, you know. Without X-Pac, there is no DX. His name was literally in the name, so it just kind of made sense. Even, you know, when Shawn and Triple H, when they first started DX, and then when New Age Outlaws and X-Pac, it just all made sense. It was a seamless transition. Click, you know, NWO, we can go through the list. He's made major contributions, not just to those factions, but to his fighting in-ring ability and style. To me, though, personally, he's never been somebody I really, like, yeah, X-Pac. Because, I don't know if it's because of his lifestyle outside, and again, judgment-free. But just knowing a lot of China struggles, and it just, you know, reality TV really let you in to a lot of what they deal with. I just kind of saw Savage he dealt with her sometimes. And I don't know if that's what made me kind of put this wall up as it relates to him. I respect him. I recognize what he's done. But will I say, hey, he needs to go into the Hall of Fame? A lot of people might disagree with me here. And I would say no. Like, is he somebody who, like, was one of my favorite? No. Has nothing to do with his wrestling ability. Again, not passing any judgment, none of that. I just, a lot of what he did or what he was to me has been overshadowed by what happened outside of the ring. To me, it's almost like one of those Chris Benoit situations. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. not as severe as that, God no, but it's almost like an Ultimate Warrior situation. It's like, and the reason it's so sensitive is because China was an active wrestler. You know, she was within that family. And I just felt, I feel like, oh, come on, man. You know what I mean? Like, what's done is done. What's in the past is in the past. But it just, that affects my affection towards him. Has there, the wrestlers, we can go down the list and talk about those who've done some dark things and dark past. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because China was a woman, or I don't know if it's because I really like China. I don't know. But it just kind of just that whole interaction there just makes me less empathetic towards Mr. Waltman. And that's all I say about that.
All right. Well,
I'm done.
Sure to tune in on Spotify, Apple, to the Preachers and Pinfalls podcast next week.
I keep thinking you're about to say Preachers and Pimps.
You need to pray about that. I'm going to lead off right now. When we talk about WrestleMania next week, I'm going to tell you why the women's tag titles should be defended at TakeOver New York and not WrestleMania. But until then, shout out to one SD Jones. And apologies always to Barry Horowitz. I am Pastor Dante with Pastor Dance, and we'll see you guys next week.
All right.